Hello and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast.
Hello, mate.
How are you?
I'm all right, you?
Oh, it's been a big week, isn't it?
It has.
It's been a big week. Mexit.
Oh, is that what they're calling it?
Mexit is the big new thing we've got to worry about.
I didn't know they had a name for it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, now that we've got Brexit done, we can have Mexit.
Yeah.
It's been a week of, well, controversy and shock in the UK, hasn't it?
I suppose so, if you care.
I mean, what do you make of it all?
I'm not really too interested in the royal family. I've got nothing against them. I'm just not really too keen. Well, so I'm not too bothered.
You don't care?
Not really.
There's been uproar in the country about it, because apparently Harry and Meghan, they want to step back from royal life. By the way, can I just say, do you remember last week when we were looking ahead to the predictions for 2020?
Oh, yeah.
You know the old asparagus woman?
Yes.
Well, did she not predict that there'd be a royal stepping back from duties?
I don't think it's the royal she was talking about, but...
Well, she didn't specify, did she? We guessed when we talked about it that it may well be Andrew.
That seemed likely at the time, but no.
But I think perhaps she's onto something. We were a bit quick to perhaps be cynical.
We were.
With her,
that's right, didn't it?
Asparagus readings. We did say never question the asparagus.
No, only a fool questioned the asparagus reader.
So apparently this week there's going to be face-to-face meetings between the Queen and Harry. I think Chaz is going to be there. Maybe William.
That was the controversial bit, wasn't it? That he just announced it without, you know, talking to the top dog first.
Don't call her a dog.
No, top dog. You know, the king of the castle or queen of the castle.
Don't call her Majesty a dog.
No, I wasn't.
You were.
No, I wasn't.
You were.
No,
I just... Do you know what? It's people like you who should be taken to the tower.
No.
It's a shame we've got rid of that sort of thing.
So, apparently, though,
they did tell one form of royalty before anyone else.
Did they? Who?
Elton John knew.
Oh.
He knew before the royal family knew that this was going to be the thing.
Okay. What? I mean, not telling the Queen, I can sort of understand it, but when she found out that he told Elton John first, that's going to sting, isn't it?
I'd like to think that she was very upset about that and just stomped around the palace getting fucking hell. And Philip's spitting blood.
Is he?
He would be, though, wouldn't he?
Mm.
You wouldn't want to upset Philip.
Oh, I bet he'd kick off.
Apparently his response, this is all I've read so far, his response was, "What the bloody hell are they doing?"
Is that an actual quote, is it?
That's according to many of the papers over the last day or so, he just went, "What the bloody hell are they doing?"
Oh, dear.
I'm not even sure he said bloody. I'm not even sure he swore. Well, I can't imagine Philip would swear.
He wouldn't strike
me as the sort of man who would swear.
I did hear one theory that it's actually, although it seems rude on the surface of it, Harry's actually done the Queen a big favour by not putting her in the position to make the decision. He just announced it's happening, yeah, and that spared her the grief of having to sort of forbid him from doing it or approve it or whatever she was going to do.
Well, I suppose, yeah, but they've still got to discuss it, haven't they? It's not like he's just gone, "That's it, we're off on a plane."
Yeah.
He's got to go. I mean, she's gone. She's already Mexited. She's gone. I think good on him, to be honest.
Mexit isn't really fair because you don't really get the Harry bit in Mexit, do you?
No, I don't know how. Mexit.
There you go.
Mexit.
Solved it.
I'll tell you one of the things that I noticed from watching some of the coverage of the Harry thing.
Go on.
Was this desire for the news channels to get some sort of inside information, or at least an inside thought on it all.
Yeah.
And I was watching literally 5 minutes of one of the news bulletins, and the people they had on, I've got nothing against the people they had on in terms of them as human beings, but it just seemed to be ridiculous that they had someone from the choir that sang at their wedding.
Really?
To discuss the issue. I mean, look, they can sing, great, fantastic choir, but are they the people to interview about it?
Yeah, they're probably not going to have much of an inside scoop, are they?
I wouldn't have thought so, but this got me thinking about TV. So I want to talk about TV this week.
All right.
So I think TV has changed so much over the last few years that it's got ridiculous in so many ways now, particularly like news. You've got rolling news that they just have to fill.
Yeah.
So you end up talking to these absolute nobodies in terms of the story, really.
Mm.
Or you find that they're knocking on the doors of people who don't need to be bothered at a certain time. I know there's always been doorstepping by journalists.
Yeah.
But it does my head in that TV's sort of got to that level.
Well, they're just desperate to fill the time, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They are. But then I just got thinking about TV in general and how it's changed over the years and how, like when I was a kid, like TV was, I mean, I'm a telly addict. There's no doubt about that. I still am. I love telly and I love comedy. I love documentaries. As you know, I watch all documentaries.
Yep.
You've often had a go at me for some of the documentaries.
Well, because some of the documentaries you watch are great and you've recommended them to me.
Yeah.
But then you'll tell me you've been watching, I don't know, Trevor McDonald takes a look at Argentinian castles or something.
Well, no, the one...
So weird.
Well, no, I watched one about the building of the cathedral in Liverpool, which was actually very interesting.
Right.
And I was drawn into this documentary about the not just the structure of it, not just the architecture of it, but also the sort of meaning of it in the community. And I just it was fascinating.
Right.
And I remember telling you about it. And honestly, you just like poo-pooed it as if I was wasting my life.
You watch so many strange things, though.
I don't watch. I watch a lot of fascinating things. I'm just about to watch a documentary on the Victorian era.
Oh.
Why are you? There's nothing wrong with that. A bit of history, Ben.
Oh, I know. That's all well and good. But there are some people who just love World War II stories and will watch endless documentaries, and I bet you enjoy a good World
War II. Well, I'm just watching a great...
I bet you are.
I am. World War II in colour, which is on Netflix.
For those who thought it wasn't exciting enough in black and white.
No, it's fascinating. So many things that I'm learning. You know, I knew a lot of things because I studied World War II a little bit at school, but there were things I'd never heard of before, and I don't know, it's just a fascinating period of history for me, so I enjoy watching it.
Well, good for you.
But what I was going to say was jaw-dropping moments on telly.
Mm.
Now, when I was a kid, I got memory of jaw-dropping moments. Do you?
I don't really know what you mean. I mean, I sort of understand, like, you know, big sporting moments I remember. Like Johnny Wilkinson's last-minute drop goal against the World Cup.
Yeah.
I'm a bit too young. Yeah, I'm a bit too young for it. But Steve Davis winning the dramatic snooker final, all that stuff.
Yeah. Dennis Taylor, of course, won the most dramatic snooker final.
Again, I'm too young for that one.
Was that 85?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Something like that.
So, yeah. But no, I mean, the one that really sticks out in my mind was I was about 9 or 10, and it was Halloween, and there was a Paul Daniels magic special on the telly.
Right.
And... at the end of this show, which was just his normal sort of trickery, all the normal Paul Daniels type things, and then at the end he finished with the big trick, which was to go into this sort of, what do you call it, like a cage with spikes on a door that would close.
And that's called Iron Maiden, isn't it?
An Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
That must be it. Yes, it's got all these spikes. And of course you've got so long to escape from it.
Okay.
So I remember watching this as it was going out, and they made this announcement to say, you know, he's got so long to escape. If he's not out by the time the door's shut, because it was a live audience watching this, and so the announcement was made, you will be asked to leave quietly.
Mm.
And of course the clock ticks down, and then the door slams shut. The screen went black. And there was just a voice that was making the announcement to the audience to leave the room quietly. Ooh. And then the credits rolled. Well, I don't even know if they had credits. It probably just cut.
Wow.
And no explanation. And that affected me massively. I mean, I genuinely thought Paul Daniels had been killed on telly.
Well, that does sound quite traumatising.
It was incredibly traumatic.
The closest thing I've got to that, because, you know, there's a few years between us, and I don't remember that, but, and you'll have seen this as well, Derren Brown playing Russian roulette.
Yes.
That was nervy.
That was nervy, but you always knew he was going to get through that. Like, if he was going to do the Paul Daniels thing, there should have been the sound of a gunshot and the screen should have gone black, and that should have been the end of it.
But... that might have slightly spoiled the rest of his career.
Well, it didn't do Paul Daniels any harm, did it? Pretending faking his own death on telly.
Speaking of Derren Brown stunts, I think, and he'll probably disagree with me, and who am I to question Derren Brown, but I actually think, do you remember when he did the casino roulette trick?
Yes.
And he basically...
It didn't work, did it?
No, he messed it right up. And he put 5,000 quid of someone else's money, a member of the public's money, on this spin of the wheel. And he was going to predict where the ball would land. And he got it wrong by one slot, which meant the show ended, credits rolled, he'd messed it up, it all gone wrong.
Yeah.
But I think that was actually one of the best things to happen to his career, because once you realise it's not always guaranteed to work, he's not always going to look like the hero, then the next time he plays Russian roulette or does one of these amazing stunts, there you feel, because he has been wrong before, there is proper jeopardy to it.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, because again, when I watched that, I thought there'll be some addendum to that show to explain why he made it go wrong, but it just ended, didn't it? It's like it's gone wrong, and yeah, that was it.
And then he uploaded a video to YouTube basically saying, oh, balls that one up, didn't I?
Did it?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, those are jaw-dropping moments as well, like something like that, because Derren Brown, you watch all of his stuff and he's fantastic. Derren Brown, I'm such a massive fan.
Same here.
And you just expect everything he does to go right, and he puts so much time and effort into those things. I suppose if it goes wrong right at the end, you can't just stop the whole thing and say we can't put it out on telly, because so much money's been invested in the production of that show already.
Yeah.
And the time and effort he's put into finding, because I can't remember the whole, presumably he had to whittle it down to get the person who was going to give the money or whatever it was.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Did he reimburse the person whose money
he did.
Lost?
Yeah,
he
did.
That's good. And the other thing I remember as a kid was a thing called, I think it was called Ghost Hunt.
Was this the BBC thing?
Yeah.
And this really, it got a lot of complaints, didn't it?
I don't think it's ever been shown again. And I don't know when this was, but I must have been about, again, 10 or 11. Absolutely terrified me. It was hosted by Michael Parkinson, and they had Sarah Green, who was a well-known presenter at the time, and I think Mike Smith, who was also a well-known presenter, I think they were married, actually, and they were in this house where it was supposedly haunted by this ghost that was called Pipes. Kept banging the pipes.
Okay.
And as the show went on, they had people, it was sort of set up like it was a live show, and people were phoning in to say they'd seen things. And obviously when they were in the house, there were things set up so you could see perhaps a figure here or there. And I remember sitting watching it and seeing a figure in the corner and being absolutely terrified. And then all these hauntings start happening in the television studio, and the cameras started moving on their own, and then I think that just went black, just sort of finished.
Right.
And again, that was a thing that traumatized me. But you don't get those these days.
Well, you say that. I mean, that was obviously on a time when I was too young to have seen it, but there was something, because I sort of think, oh, come on, really, people fell for this, did they? But a year or so ago, there was the Inside Number 9 Halloween special.
Oh, this was the live one, wasn't it?
They did it live.
Supposedly.
Well, no, I think it was live.
Well, maybe.
And I'm not going to spoil anything in case you want to go back and see it, but all I'll say is, I fell for that hook, line, and sinker.
I know. Well, you sent me a text. I'll be careful, again, not to give too much away, but you sent me a text basically to say, don't bother.
Yeah.
Don't bother watching it. I'd already seen it, or I was watching at the same time, and I just sent you a message going, stay with it. Stay with it.
Yep.
So, yeah, I suppose that was a more recent...
Good advice, too.
And I suspect there was a lot drawn upon that from Ghost Hunt.
It was
brilliant. All right, then, what's the most offensive thing you've ever seen on telly, or the most distasteful thing?
Can I count live performances of Robbie Williams? No.
Yeah, what do you
I just get so annoyed. I think, bless him, he'll be the first to admit he's not the greatest singer in the world, and I get so pissed off when I see singers lazily just holding the microphone out to the crowd and expecting them to sing along with them.
Do you?
I find that really gets on my nerves. Like, you've got one job, it's supposed to be a singer, and you're not even bothering with that at this point.
Are you not into, because I'm not really into going to live gigs and that sort of thing.
Well, you know, I've been to a couple, but no.
Who have you seen live?
I think I went to Party in the Park one year when I was younger.
Party in the Park?
Yeah.
That would have been like all the pop stars of the day.
Yeah.
But they would have been doing all that, wouldn't they? You would have been asked to sing along. Do you know what I hate is the communal clapping?
Oh.
I can't bear communal clapping. if I go somewhere where that has to happen, I don't join in. I look such a miserable sod.
Really?
But I will not join in with communal clapping.
I don't think I could go to a concert anymore. I think the clapping, the singing along, and everyone and their brother holding up their iPhone to record crap quality footage so they can watch it later on or upload it to YouTube.
You're completely
missing the experience.
The worst thing is if you end up going to something with a group of people who are, you know, the real extroverts in the world. So I remember being dragged along. I mean, this is one of the worst nights of my life, being dragged along to, what were they called? Bjorn Again.
Oh.
The ABBA tribute group.
Oh.
I mean, already it sounds dreadful, doesn't it?
It does.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I love a bit of ABBA here and there. It's fine to hear a bit of ABBA. But to be dragged along to this concert, there was a spare ticket going and a whole group of friends were going. And I thought, okay, I'll come along just to see these people. I don't see them very often. We'll have a night out.
Yeah.
Right? Now, obviously, the place was full of... I don't know whether it's people that are extrovert or whether it's people... Do you struggle to get caught up in an atmosphere?
Yes, sometimes, yeah.
See, I do. I admire people that can get so caught up in an atmosphere that all inhibition goes out the window. And because, see, I can't lose inhibitions.
Right.
So when I'm somewhere where there's live music, I think that's part of why I don't like the communal clapping. Because to me, that's a loss of control.
You think so?
Well...
You don't like to lose yourself in the moment?
No, but I just feel too self-conscious. And then... So we're at this thing, right? We're at the ABBA thing. And I don't know. It's towards the end of the concert. And they want everyone to stand up and dance and jiggle about in the aisles and all that stuff. And pretty much... Everyone's doing it.
Oh, right.
And I'm with this group of people. Now, there's someone in the group I don't know very well. And they're, come on, get up. Come on. It's like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm
don't
not
you
doing
feel
it.
You're standing out even more by not joining in, though.
Yeah, but if I... Well, there is that. But if I stand up, I can't do that. I cannot get involved in that level of interaction.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I don't like that. If I go to see something, I'm there to see it. And I think that's my problem. It's my problem because I can't lose myself in a moment. And I think that's I kind of admire people that can do that. See, going back to TV, I don't watch any of these reality things. I don't watch any of these talent shows because there's just too many of them. I noticed there's one on now called The Mask or something.
Really?
Have you seen this?
No.
The singers wear masks and costumes, and I don't know what the premise of the show is. I've not seen it. All I know is that former MP Alan Johnson was uncovered as one of these people. I don't know if the idea is you have to guess who's in the suit singing.
That just sounds like an unnecessary twist on The Voice, doesn't it? Where they don't look at them until they turn around.
Well, this is what pissed me off. Because when you look at telly, particularly on a Saturday night here in the UK, I mean, it's just dire. Thank God that there are so many things that I can watch elsewhere, like documentaries about World War II. Because if you're into that Saturday night TV, fine. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it if you like it. It's just not for me. And you look at the schedules on a... This is what I hate. On a Saturday night, you've got dancing and singing wall to wall. And they're all the same. You've got the panel of four judges, three or four judges. You've got the baying audience. And I can't bear it. And then you get the communal clapping.
Yep.
And anything on telly that's got an audience where there is more than two beats of music, they launch into this ridiculous clapping. And I can't stand it.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the sort of thing that I wouldn't say offends me because nothing truly offends me on TV, but that stuff winds me up. But I mean, what would you say you were offended by that you've seen on TV?
When I say that I've been offended by, I just think it's TV that I'm talking again, how TV's changed over the years, that would never even get to a point of being made now. But back in the 70s and 80s and before were made. So famously things like Mind Your Language, which was a sitcom in the 70s here in the UK, which was, I've only seen snippets of it, but fairly racist.
Oh, we had plenty of racist sitcoms and stuff, didn't we?
I mean,
even well-known, still on TV today, you know, episodes of some shows.
Only Fools and Horses, some of the early episodes have got some very racist references in them.
Very.
And even 40 Towers has got some racist reference in them. There's certainly one episode that I can think of. Oh, I suppose the whole Manuel thing is fairly racist.
Yeah.
But what they do now, I've noticed on the... I was reading the other day that there's a new thing called BritBox, which is this new subscribe channel. And they now have messages, like disclaimers before shows to say this was sort of their time. So you're aware they might be full of these things.
Okay.
But there are shows out there that... even for their time, didn't get very far. I think the worst one I've ever seen, and it's available on YouTube, it was a sitcom, I think they showed the pilot, but it never went beyond that, called Heil Honey, I'm Home.
Oh no, I think you've told me about this before.
Yeah, it was a sitcom in which Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun live next to a Jewish couple, I think in New York.
That's in such bad taste.
And I think the pilot went out, and thank God it didn't go beyond that. The pilot is on YouTube. It is just horrendous to watch. And it was about, I think it was about 1990 or something like that. That, I mean, by 1990, surely, when they sat down for the meeting and someone got, I've got this great idea, we're going to call it Heil Honey, I'm Home, somebody would have gone, probably not. You know, if you've got an idea for a talent show, that might be better.
Grief.
There was also one called Man versus Beast, which again never got anywhere. But the idea was that you would have human beings taking on animals at certain things.
Such as what?
44 dwarves pulling a jet against, while an elephant pulled a jet. So who could pull the jet?
Why dwarves?
But I don't know. I mean,
that's a very strange choice, isn't it?
Well, it's, I suppose, again, for entertainment value, perhaps they thought dwarves would be a more interesting thing.
Like the Victorian circus.
Basically, yeah. I think the idea was that they would have to go against animals. There was a thing like the other one I read was a sprinter was going to take on a giraffe in the 100 metres. I mean, how are you getting the giraffe to run 100 metres on cue?
Well, good luck with that.
I don't know how you're getting there. Anyway, the show, thankfully, didn't get too far because animal rights groups protested and it never went out. But I think they made them. John Fashanu made 6 episodes.
Really?
That was supposed to go out on ITV. Thankfully, it never did.
You say thankfully, and I think they were completely right to shut this programme down. But there is part of me, now you've said it, I'd love to see a man racing a giraffe. I'm doing the 100 metre dash because I genuinely don't know who I put my money on.
Giraffe would win.
Well, is it allowed to just lie down and use the extra length from its neck to cross the finish line quicker?
Well,
it's about getting your head over the line. With that neck, I mean, that's a hell of an advantage.
But I don't think the giraffe is going to be conscious of the fact it's in a race.
You think the giraffe would do the lean through over the final?
Well, I'd like to think so. But again, I'm just saying that the giraffe is likely to not be aware that there's a finish line, that's where it's aiming for. It's not going to do a dive at the end if it thinks it's going to... I mean, when you say neck and neck, I mean, again, there's a little bit of me that would be quite interested in seeing dwarves pulling a jet against an elephant.
You know what? I'm happy to admit I would be curious to see what that looked like as well. But on the other hand, I'm glad that someone nipped this in the bud.
Another show that was once they were going to put on. This is incredible. I must admit, I only found out by looking up about this. There was a show once that was going to be called, I think it went out for one episode, called Who's Your Daddy? It was an American reality show. And the idea was they were going to have this young woman who was about to be reunited with her biological father, whom she hadn't seen since birth.
Okay.
You think, well, it's a lovely reunion story.
Yeah.
It's a lovely thing. But the idea was that she would be placed in a room with 25 men and she had to correctly pick her actual father to win $100,000. If she was incorrect, then her wrong daddy would pocket the money.
What?
I know. And it went out for one episode and everyone was like, no. You can't do that.
I mean, who thought of that? You know, a lovely moment on TV, someone being reunited, let's make a game show out of it.
I know. And the weird thing is, right, if you were to watch that show, would you be annoyed that only one episode went out?
Well, I'm curious to know. This the stupid thing about this. I think these are all terrible ideas, but I think I would watch it. Did she pick the right guy?
I don't know. Ugh. I have absolutely... Well, this is the thing, right? This is what I was going to say. Because if you've watched the first episode and then there's such an uproar that they cancel it or perhaps... Because in America, they're quite quick, aren't they? If the viewing figures are crap, they just pull it. Wouldn't you be so annoyed that there's not a conclusion?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is my problem. And I think this is why it happens with all this crap TV. It's because... It sounds like such an insanely bad idea, but I'm sitting here thinking, I'd definitely watch it, at least the first couple of episodes.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Idiots like me, who are the reason these shows get made.
The other thing I remember as a kid, this was a show that was on, and I've talked about this, I think I talked about this when we were on the radio, but no one ever remembers this show apart from me. There was a show called Manimal.
No, I don't remember that.
There was basically I think he was a policeman. I'm not entirely sure, but I think he was a policeman because he'd often have to get involved in fighting crime and finding criminals, but he would be able to change himself into animals to... help him on his cause.
Okay.
He could become a panther, a hawk, something like that. And I loved that show. Absolutely loved it, right? And then about 15 years ago, I came across it on a cable channel. And I thought, oh, man, it's Manimal. God, it was shit.
Was it bad?
I mean, it was absolutely awful. The episode I saw was, I think he was tracking down, I don't know, it was a murder or something, and the guy had a parrot in a cage, so obviously he was able to turn himself into a parrot and go and sit in the cage and eavesdrop on the conversations.
Wow, what a boring plot for any episode. I'm gonna become an eavesdropping parrot.
But and I know it was the 80s, but
the riveting watch.
But the effects were so bad. And this parrot didn't look anything like a real parrot. It was dreadful.
Why couldn't they have used a real parrot?
Because it needed to look around, I suppose. I mean, I think they had
shots. It needed to look like it was listening.
But yeah, and maybe talk. I can't remember if it had to talk. I can't remember now, but I just remember thinking it looked like a really bad animatronic parrot. But there's a bit of me that thinks we should remake it now, because with the technology we've got now, you can make that really good.
I'm not sure how many cases you need the ability to transform yourself into an animal to solve, though. I couldn't think of many episodes of that if that was my job as a writer.
I wonder how many seasons it ran. I'm going to look up how many seasons it ran for.
It doesn't sound like it'll have been many.
Well, I remember it being on for quite a while. I'm going to look up Manimal and see how long it was on for.
And if you could also try and find maybe a few episode plot lines for me.
Okay.
Because I think I would really run out of ideas so fast on how to write this appalling sounding show.
It did only run for one series.
There we go.
By the way.
How many episodes?
Let me find
out. One?
No, there was definitely
the parrot
episode. hang on, I'll just look it up. I'm sure there was, I mean, I'm guessing maybe 6 or 8 episodes, something like that. There were 8 episodes.
Eight episodes.
The pilot was 90 minutes.
Good grief.
Right, here's the synopsis for the pilot. When a group of thieves devise a plan to hijack a shipment of nerve gas, Detective Brooke McKenzie must stop them. She teams up with Dr. Jonathan Chase.
He's an animal, yeah.
A man that knows the secrets that divide man and animal, and who is trained in an African technique that allows him to transform into different... Oh, that's all it says there.
What was that sentence? A man that knows the difference?
No, a man who is trained in an African technique that allows him to transform into different animals.
No, before that.
A man that knows the secrets that divide man and animal.
What a sentence that is. He knows the secrets that divide man and animal.
Which we've all... He's basically David Attenborough.
And is that the end of the first episode synopsis?
That's all I've got about it, yeah. Which is a real shame. I'm trying to find...
That's disappointing.
Yeah. It doesn't say what animals he turns into, which is really disappointing. I mean, I'm guessing there's one called High Stakes, when a horse trainer recognises her stolen horse in a race. Jonathan helps her to recover it.
Don't need the ability to transfer in... Well, mind you, they never found Shergar.
Exactly.
Maybe if we had Manimal on the case.
Exactly, yeah. And I've got a feeling the one with the parrot, because this rings a bell, was... Oh, I don't know, though. It's called Night of the Scorpion. But while being...
I wonder what animal he turned into
While being interrogated by Russian agents about the location of a list, I don't know what's on the list, a man dies from a truth serum drug. A note and $2 million are left to his daughter, Terry. Jonathan, Brooke and Ty must protect Terry while trying to locate the list before the Russian agents do. I've got a feeling that's the one where he turns into a parrot at some point.
Why did he OD on truth serum?
But I don't know. It doesn't say. It doesn't really give too many details on the episodes.
Okay. Any other episodes you can tease me with? Because I'm being honest again, I'm tempted to watch this shit now.
Right, I'll give you one more then.
Go on. Hopefully the name of the animal will be in the title.
The episode's called Scrimshaw.
Okay.
Does that give you a clue as to what the animal might be?
Not really.
Okay, do you know what Scrimshaw is?
I don't.
Okay, fair enough.
What is it?
Well, I'll tell you in a minute. While at the beach, Jonathan and others discover a Scrimshaw, which is a walrus tusk with carvings on it.
Okay.
in the clutches of a skeleton. They begin investigating a local bar where they encounter someone who has been looking for it their whole life. Now, I'm guessing he may well turn into a walrus.
Yep.
But I don't know. It doesn't...
For no reason. How does that help?
Why does he not tell you what animal he turns into? Really annoyed.
But again, I'd love to see the plot played out and how on earth I have the ability to transform into a walrus. Well, so? I mean, how does that help us solve the crime?
But it... I just...
So fucking what? So any other great shows you can remember?
Well, I mean, not that I remember seeing it, but I do remember reading about a show. I can't remember what it was called, but the idea was that somebody bought a car and it turned out the car was their reincarnated mother.
What?
I think it was called My Mother the Car or something like that.
Oh, I must have really sweated over that name.
And she was able to talk to the car because it was her mother. I think some people call it the worst TV show ever made.
It sounds it. It can't have run for long.
I never... Well, I'll look up that, shall I? See how many episodes ran of that. I think it was called My Mother... Let me see if it was called My Mother the Car.
But what would be the point? Like, each episode, he gets himself into a new moral
I think it was a woman.
Oh, sorry. Very sexist of me.
Yeah.
She gets herself into a new moral dilemma and then has to, consult with her mother the car for some great motherly advice?
Well, I suppose so, yeah. I mean... Oh, no, I think it was a... I don't know if it was a man or a woman here. I'm just looking at some of the episodes here. It was called My Mother the Car.
Oh.
So like episode 2, for example.
I'm amazed it got to episode 2.
Which has got a great title, though.
Go on.
It's called The Defenders. I mean, it's a good title.
Not bad.
I'll give you that, right? The synopsis is, when Dave learns that there are local vandals who are stripping cars, he spends a sleepless night going to ridiculous lengths to ensure mother's safety. I don't know what the ridiculous lengths are.
Put it in a garage?
So, you know, he's obviously looking after his mother, who's now a car.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how you... I mean, the first episode, which again has got a great title, just called Come Honk Your Horn, while perusing the car...
It's quite inappropriate, that title, isn't it, when you consider that, you know, it's his mother, do you think?
Why is it inappropriate?
Are
you assuming?
It just smacks of ickiness. I don't know. I can't really describe why that's...
Don't honk your horn.
Don't honk your horn. Too right.
Because I'm assuming perhaps the horn...
Yeah,
you know, I don't know how the mechanics of a reincarnated human being work in a car.
Neither do I.
But anyway, the the pilot, while perusing the local car lot, Dave Crabtree discovers that his mother Gladys has been reincarnated.
Gladys Crabtree, yeah, lovely.
Has been reincarnated as a junky old Porter automobile. So he buys her and brings her home, much the dismay of both his wife and eccentric car collector Captain Manzini.
Wow.
I mean, already you want to watch this show now. I bet it's on YouTube.
Do you think?
Yeah. Can we... Right, here's what we need to do, right? By this time next week, I'm going to see if I can watch an episode of that.
Okay.
And can you see if you can track down an episode of Manimal?
I'll do it.
And we'll report back next week.
Will do. Now, Now, of course, one of the genres that we both really do enjoy is true crime, especially true crime documentaries, things like that.
Oh, there's been some cracking ones recently.
Absolutely belting.
And it's really weird because we now live in this world where you don't all watch TV at the same time. It's really difficult to talk about these things because you don't want to give too much away if people haven't seen them yet.
No.
So I spend a lot of my life now saying, oh, have you seen? And then someone go, no. And go, basically it's about a man who's been convicted of killing somebody and I can't give too much away.
Yeah.
That is basically my life now.
What you've got to do is you've got to recommend things to very good friends who will take your word for it.
Yes.
Because you have to honestly say to them, I can't tell you anything about it because it'll spoil it, but just take my word for it. It's brilliant.
And you and I are so into it. We talk about it a lot, and so is Mrs. Ben. And in fact, Mrs. Ben this very morning has given me a list. Here it is, the list of true crime programs to watch. And I will take this away and devour them all.
I'm sure you will.
Because I've become quite addicted to these things. Now, the one that really got me going was one called The Staircase.
Oh, yeah, that was amazing. You put me onto that. I'll be honest, I first saw the first episode and I thought, oh, really?
Well, because you have to stick with some of these.
Yeah, you do. I mean, episode one of The Staircase especially, they do tend to go through a complete diagram of who's related to who and how they're related and, oh, family tree. And to me, it was like watching paint dry. But then The Staircase really takes off.
And again, if you've not seen The Staircase, we're not going to spoil that for you, but it is the story of a death and the investigation of that and how the court proceedings go ahead. And that's basically where you have to follow the whole story, don't you? There's quite a lot of episodes of it.
Oh, it's quite long.
But it's a fascinating thing. Then there's, of course, Making a Murderer, which is the one that's gone huge.
I feel like we could talk about Making a Murderer because I feel, at this point, who hasn't seen it? But to be fair, we won't give away anything, but that is another must-see if you haven't already.
But again, it's a guy called Stephen Avery who, again, there's a death involved and a trial, and it's just how the story unfolds.
There's so many twists and turns along the way.
Yeah. But the thing about a lot of these is you just think, I wouldn't trust the American justice system. I'm not saying the British justice system is any better, but we're just seeing a lot of these American ones at the moment.
We are, yeah.
Where you see, I wouldn't trust this an inch.
There does seem to be I'm not saying it applies to all of these documentaries, but there is a theme in most of them, I'd say, that there is a very big corruption problem with a lot of police departments in the States.
And they all seem incredibly thick.
They do.
If you're an American police officer, I don't think you have to have a huge IQ, really, do you? Honestly.
It does seem that way.
It just seems like that you might as well put, I don't know, children in charge. I mean, they're just absolutely thick. And the thing about it is, I remember growing up watching one of those video shows that show car crashes and police chases and all that sort of thing. And it was an American one. They had this white-haired old police captain presenting it.
Right.
And everything, it would be the brave police officers, you know, the great law enforcement, the great US marshals, you know, all that stuff. And you think, God, like, you big them up, like they're the great bastion of law enforcement in the world. And they're just thick. They're like hicks running around just doing what they want. It's incredible.
So shall we talk about Don't Fuck With Cats?
Yeah, no, I mentioned this in the Christmas podcast. And I have had so many conversations about that since. So if you haven't seen Don't Fuck With Cats, which is on Netflix, it's only three parts, isn't it?
Yeah, three episodes. Yeah.
Then you might want to stop listening now.
Yeah, this is going to be the last segment of the podcast, so you're not going to miss anything. This is going to be the final bit. But if you haven't seen it and you don't want to hear spoilers, bye.
Yes, thank you for listening. But come back to this bit. Go and watch it and then come back to this bit.
Yeah.
So Don't Fuck With Cats, Ben.
Well, one second. For those listeners who have come back, welcome back.
I mean, it's just incredible, isn't it? I have, since I mentioned it on the Christmas podcast, I have pretty much spoken non-stop to nearly everyone I've met about this.
Yep.
So we're not going to mention the guy's name.
No, because basically we've got, you know, the sort of point of the documentary is he seems to be very fame hungry. He's looking to make a name of himself, and you know, we don't want to help him do that.
Now, the weird thing is, I didn't know anything about the case, so I started watching the first episode and I turned it off because it shows that he's going to put these kittens in a bag and vacuum all the air out.
Which is at the same point, Mrs. Ben started watching it without me, and she turned it off and said, listen, you're going to need to watch this with me. It's incredible, but I can't bring myself to watch it because I'm not quite sure what they're going to show next.
Yeah.
And I was quite confident that, you know, come on, it's a Netflix documentary. They're not going to show anything that brutal, and they don't.
No. So I went back to it and I started watching it, and I didn't, I just thought the story was going to be that there's a man who's been filming himself and posting videos online of him killing cats.
Yeah.
And they then interview this man and woman who kind of try and track this bloke down. And I thought, well, that's the story here. It's a couple of people on the trail of a cat killer.
And they were so... Well, it wasn't just those two. They did have their own sort of community of people who were all going after him. And they were so brilliant at the way they did it. Looking at things in the video for, like, electrical plugs, seeing how many sockets it is. That'll help you narrow down. The Hoover.
There was a Hoover in one of the videos, and they tracked down where this Hoover was, you know, what part of the world the Hoover was available in.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just incredible. I'll tell you what, if they had Manimal... I could have cracked this a lot quicker.
I could have.
But then the story takes a turn, which I didn't expect, which was then he turns into a murderer.
He does.
He moves on from cats to killing people.
Mm.
And again, these the weird thing is, we talked about the police. They reported this guy to the police.
Oh, yeah. It turns out it really wasn't the police that got this guy. It was largely down to the work of sort of armchair detectives at home.
Yes, because the police basically thought, well, you're all nutters. You're all sitting at home, trawling the internet, going through Google Maps, Street View, seeing where he's standing, seeing where that railing is, where those traffic lights are. And then they track him down.
Yeah.
I think the guy's name was it Jun Lin?
That's right.
The victim.
I mean, they do often say in these cases, when people start murdering animals, the natural progression is to end up killing humans.
Yes, but what a show. So what did you make of the show itself?
I thought it was incredibly well made.
It was,
so brilliantly made. I thought, again, I don't want this to sound like praise, but I thought the killer was astonishingly intelligent. He thought this through to the point of sort of thinking, knowing he was being caught on CCTV cameras, and he had this very strange alibi that he was being ordered to commit these crimes by some higher power that you never see, called Manny.
Yeah.
But he made sure that this alibi slightly had some water to it by, you know, he'd be going out to a car with his phone, and that was captured on CCTV, and he could point back to it afterward and say, look, I left the building with my phone. That was because I was giving this Manny person the footage.
Yes, yeah.
So as horrible and as evil as he is, he wasn't an idiot.
No, but the weird thing is, he was basically living out in his head the film Basic Instinct.
Yeah, he was obsessed by it.
And I had worked out some of the Basic Instinct links before that was revealed. But what I didn't know, or what I'd forgotten, was that there was a character in Basic Instinct called Manny.
Yeah.
So the wonderful way that this documentary is made is it makes you think that this man is totally responsible, he's a cold-blooded killer, evil, nasty person. And then his mother is interviewed. They talk about this character, Manny, who's making him do these things. And then I started to have a little bit of sympathy, in a way. I'm not saying that I was thinking, oh, well, you poor chap, because he still killed somebody on camera. But I was thinking, oh, maybe he is. And because I hadn't worked that link out. And then he realised that he's made the whole thing up. And he's actually living out the film in his head.
Can I ask you, now, I don't, you know, really stroke your ego or anything, but were you particularly clever to have worked out it was a Basic Instinct thing? I've never seen Basic Instinct, so I don't know, if I had have seen it, would I have worked that out myself? Do you think it's quite obvious that's what he was doing?
Well,
were you just quite...
No. I'm not that clever. basically, because I saw Basic Instinct a lot in my teenage years.
I see. I bet a certain part in particular.
Yeah, and in those days, the pause on a video, it was very jumpy. You know, you don't know, you're born with DVDs and YouTube these days. But anyway, there was a thing with the ice pick that he used as a weapon.
Which wasn't an actual ice pick, was it?
It was a screwdriver, wasn't it? That painted. Yeah. So that had gone into my head, because as soon as they used the word ice pick, I went straight to Basic Instinct in my head.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And then it was only later on where his mum talks about his obsession with films.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed, I think there was a bag with a Basic Instinct keyring on it. And at that point, I thought, this is all Basic Instinct related.
Yeah.
All of this. So that was the... So I needed the big clue of the keyring.
Yeah.
To tell me that. I had just the ice pick wasn't enough. Manny wasn't enough. I hadn't got that. But there are... I'll tell you what, the main conversations I'm having about this documentary with people is the unanswered questions. And there's not many, but there are a couple.
Yeah, there are. Well, the biggest one, I think, is the second pair of hands.
So in one of the videos where it's horrible to even talk about this, but he feeds a kitten to a snake.
Yeah.
And in one of those videos, there is, in one shot, another pair of hands.
Now, am I right in thinking it is in the same shot, but it's not in the same clip that depicted the killing of the cat, which I think has led Reddit and other internet forums to conclude that this second pair of hands is not this mystery Manny person who doesn't exist. It's actually probably the owner of the snake that lent it to him or gave it to him, filmed while they were doing that handover.
But then someone said to me, there's one bit where there's a pair of hands and the snake looks incredibly full, as if it had eaten a cat.
I thought that.
Was it you that said that to me?
Yeah.
So what do you make of that then? Could you just say, oh, well, you know, I've fed the snake, here he is back.
I don't know.
Because if you're the snake owner, the snake handler, and there's a cat-shaped bulge in the snake's stomach.
I mean, you're making it sound quite cartoonish. I mean, it wasn't a cat-shaped bulge, was it?
Well, you know, certainly the snake's clearly been fed.
Yes.
And I suppose it's a kitten, so we're not talking, you know, it's not a big bulge.
No.
but I don't know. I mean, there are still people who think there might have been someone else involved.
Yeah, I don't think that's... I don't think he's even been convicted for any of the animal abuse.
Has he not?
I don't think so. I think to this day he hasn't. I think he's only been convicted of the murder.
Wow. Okay, well, I mean, that's wrong in a way.
I agree.
Yeah.
I should say I might be wrong on that, but I think I'm pretty sure I read that, but I'm happy to be proved wrong.
Okay. Well, look, the other thing that I read that suggests that perhaps there was someone else involved was a reporter who interviewed or tried to interview the killer actually before the crime was committed, I think the murder at least, when presumably they were looking for him as just the cat killer.
Right.
So he tried to phone the guy, and he thinks that he ended up speaking to another man who sounded like he was in his 50s whilst trying to speak to the subject of the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'm pretty certain that there was another person involved, because that couldn't have been his voice. It was too old a voice for the killer.
Right.
So he says that he thinks that there's more to that theory, that there was someone else involved, and maybe that man in his 50s was Manny.
No, I don't buy that.
It's a pretty long stretch, isn't it?
It is.
To assume that because you phoned somebody once and someone else answered the phone, that there's someone else involved in the whole thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't put any credit to that. But I mean, it's interesting to hear, but I don't agree with it myself.
And just before we finish, just the end of the documentary, because this is the other thing that I've had a lot of conversations about. So obviously, if you've seen it, we'd like to know what you think of the theory of the other hand, by the way. Let us know at Trev and Ben on Twitter. But at the end of the documentary, this is something that everyone I've spoken to about this has brought up.
Now, I know exactly what you're going to go on to say, and it pissed me off.
Did it?
But I would like to preface this by saying the woman we're talking about, the main sort of female hunter in this case, she is absolutely incredible. I've got all the time in the world. I think she's an amazing person, and I think she should be nothing but praised.
Yeah.
But the last 20 seconds of the whole documentary pissed me and quite a few other people off.
Yeah, yeah. Well, everyone I've spoken to.
Give it the benefit of the doubt, though, and hope maybe did we misinterpret it? Was it meant to be something else, or was it just a bit annoying?
Right, so what did she say?
at the very end of it, she basically questions how involved everyone has been in the case and how maybe they helped spur him on. And then she questions you, the watcher, your ethics for watching it and how much have you contributed to the killings. And I just sort of thought, piss off. This happened ages ago.
Yeah.
Me watching this documentary now that I didn't know about will change nothing about the outcome of it, will it?
I know. And everyone I've spoken to has said exactly the same to me. Another mate of mine just said, what did you think of the end? And I said, well, I wasn't sure. And he said, I was sat there thinking, fuck off. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Don't put any blame on me.
I hope maybe that's not what she meant, but that's certainly the way it felt. And I know it's certainly the way a lot of other people have taken it.
Well, there we are, the end of another Trev and Ben podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this little journey through television.
It's been fun.
So you're going to watch an episode of Manimal.
Well, I was just going to say, week. Except I don't like having homework, but yeah.
No, it's just one episode, and I'm going to watch My Mother the Car.
I think I've got the better end of the deal, but unbelievable.
So next week we'll come back and report on what we think of those, as long as we can find them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good. I can use that.
I'll send you a link.
Oh shit!
I shall look it up and send you a link if you can't find it. So you're going to watch an episode of Manimal. I won't make you watch the 90-minute.
No, thank you.
Pilot.
That's
you can
very
just
gracious.
Watch. They might be an hour.
An hour.
Well, they would have been on telly maybe for an hour with ads. Oh. So we're probably talking 45 minutes.
All right.
That's bearable. Come on.
I'll have to have a drink.
And you might find that you get into it. By this time next week, you might have binge watched the whole lot.
I'll start the Bring Back Manimal campaign. Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier, I'm a telly addict, so I love telly. So always recommend stuff to us, because that's what life is now. Whenever you meet someone, it's like, have you seen this? Have you seen that? Most of them are long, drawn out series. So my list just grows and grows.
Yeah.
They have all these things to watch, but I love it. So if you've got any recommendations, do let us know. We're at Trev and Ben on Twitter, and we will catch you again next week. Take it easy.
Bye.